And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
Pope Francis's historic trip to war-scarred Iraq went off without a hitch. An image boost Baghdad hopes will help revive international engagement, foreign investment, and even tourism. But while the government hailed the pontiff's successful visit as a turning point, country experts cautioned that the threats of violence and political turmoil have not vanished overnight. The 84-year-old pontiff's four-day visit was a bold trip by any measure. Iraq has long been a byword for conflict. Recent years have seen major battles to oust the Islamic State group, rocket attacks against the US-led coalition, and deadly street clashes between protesters and security forces. The Pope's visit stood in welcome contrast as Francis crisscrossed the country and spread his message of peace to jubilant crowds. Baghdad believes it marked a turning point that will change Iraq's image as a dangerous destination, Foreign Ministry spokesman Amir al-Sahaf told AFP as the Pope's plane left for Rome. If Iraq was not stable and secure, would someone of the stature of the Pope have been able to travel around, he said. The whole world was following the success of this trip. A senior security official told AFP that intelligence agencies had worked day and night as Francis toured sites, including the northern city of Mosul, a former IS bastion still largely in ruins, and nearby plains where paramilitaries remain powerful. The fact that there was no security issue, not even a tiny one, the official said, proves Iraq is done with terrorism and can protect foreign delegations who will come more easily in the future. US President Joe Biden said that to see Francis visit ancient religious sites, meet Muslim leaders, and offer prayers in Mosul, a city that only a few years ago endured the depravity and intolerance of a group like ISIS, is a symbol of hope for the entire world. Iraqi Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kadhimi announced that March the 6th, the day Francis visited top Muslim Shia cleric Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani in the shrine city of Najaf, will from now on be marked as a national day of coexistence. On Monday, Kadhimi said in a televised address that Iraq now had a historic opportunity to improve ties among its diverse ethno-religious communities and political parties. Indeed, the Pope's high-profile visit would have seemed impossible just a few years ago. In late 2017, Iraqi forces were fighting to defeat the Islamic State group's self-proclaimed caliphate, which had stretched from Syria across much of the country's north for 3 years after a decade of sectarian violence. In 2019, street rallies erupted against corruption, unemployment, and poor public services, with at least 600 people killed in protest-related violence. Their demands were not met, and deadly demonstrations again shook Baghdad days before the Pope's visit, just a short drive from where he held an interfaith service. Iraq faces many challenges, and the visit perhaps made us forget about them for a few days, said Farhad Alaldin, chairman of the Iraq Advisory Council, who told AFP, but they remain in place and are lurking menacingly. One way Iraq could capitalize on the trip, Alaldin said, would be to revamp the roads and tourism sites visited by the Pope, including the ancient site of Ur, where Abraham is said to have been born. Ur is just one of dozens of historic sites across Iraq known as the Cradle of Civilization that showcase millennia of Mesopotamian, Christian and Islamic heritage, but investment in them has been slim amid the years of turmoil. Authorities also need to take a hard look at the dismal conditions in which most of Iraq's 40 million people live, said political analyst Osama Saidi. The poverty rate has doubled to 40% in the past year due to a collapse in oil prices and the coronavirus pandemic, which has claimed more than 13,000 Iraqi lives. Most people still get only a few hours of state-provided electricity per day, and apart from roads freshly paved for the Pope's convoy, most streets flood in the winter. After this trip, all the infrastructure needs to be reassessed, and everything must be done to make this country livable, Saidi told AFP. Officials need to step up. Sajjad Jayad, a fellow at US think tank The Century Foundation, told AFP that Francis's visit was brave, but that it highlighted the failures of authorities instead of their successes. The Pope was sitting in the front of the ruins of a church more than 3 years after Mosul was liberated. It doesn't reflect well on the Iraqi government, he said. With political tensions high as parliamentary elections draw closer, some feel the feel-good Francis vibes may dissipate quickly. Unfortunately, at this moment, it looks like there's just going to be more sad news stories ahead rather than good news stories, said Jihad. The skeletons of three Catholic nuns working as nurses murdered by Soviet soldiers at the end of the Second World War have been discovered. The Red Army invaded Poland when the Nazis withdrew their soldiers in 1944. Their forces attempted to seize control by subduing militia as well as religious figures by looting and destroying churches. Records discovered from 1945 showed Soviet soldiers killed seven nuns in the Order of St. Catherine of Alexandria who were serving as nurses at Marianne Hospital in Olsztyn. A project by the Institute of National Remembrance in Poland was launched to discover their remains, and Polish archaeologists announced they had found the remains of Sister Czartina Jadwiga Fal in Gdańsk last summer. In October, they found Sister Generosa, that's Maria Boltz, Sister Christophora, Marta Klumpfuss, and Sister Liberia, Maria Domnik, in Ordina. And now the bodies of the last missing trio, Sister Rolanda, Maria Abraham, Sister Gunhilda, Dorota Stefan, and Sister Bona, Anna Peska, have been found too. Experts also unearthed crucifixes, religious clothing, and rosaries from around the remains, according to Life Science. A statement by the Institute of National Remembrance in Poland, the IPN, said, "The purpose of the study was the finding of the remains of the Catherine sisters who fell victim to the soldiers of the Red Army in 1945. They all served the sick at the Marianne Hospital, St. Mary's Hospital, in Olsztyn. They worked as nurses, looking to help for the sick and the deceased by organizing burials in a nearby cemetery. Where they served, they died there as well, defending themselves against the disgrace of the Red Army soldiers who entered Olsztyn in the winter of 1945. The works in Orneta were also the last stage in the search for the remains of the sisters, for whom the church side is carrying out the beatification process at the same time. Earlier searches were carried out in Gdańsk and Olsztyn. On the basis of historical data, anthropomorphic features and found objects, the remains of three women were selected for exhumation with the probability that they are the wanted sisters. In the collected remains, religious medals, crucifixes, elements of religious clothing and religious rosaries were found. The skeletons have been taken to the Forensic Medicine Institute in Gdańsk. Historical records showed Sister Generosa was locked in the hospital's attic. While the IPM says Sister Christophora was stabbed with a bayonet 16 times, had her eyes gouged out and her tongue cut out. Voters in Switzerland voted narrowly in favour of banning face coverings in a referendum last Sunday, as the country's hard right party won what it described as a victory against radical Islam, although minimal numbers of women in the country wear a full face veil. The final result on Sunday evening showed that 51% of Swiss voters backed the ban. It also won support in a majority of the Alpine country's 26 cantons, meaning it will now pass into law. Switzerland has a system of direct democracy that allows any proposal to be put to a referendum as long as 100,000 signatures are gathered in support of it. Opposed by the Swiss government and parliament, the proposal did not specifically mention burkas, appealing only for yes to a ban on full facial coverings. However, the yes campaign made clear that the conservative Muslim face and hair covering was the specific target, with posters encouraging voters to stop radical Islam. Radical Islam must be put in its place, said Anjan Lebrand of the right-wing SVP party on Sunday in an interview on local TV. The ban will nonetheless apply to all head coverings in public places, but not in places of worship. Critics have described it as both Islamophobic and sexist. Posters opposing the bill stated no to an absurd, useless and Islamophobic anti-burqa law. Some 5% of the population of Switzerland is Muslim, but the number of women who wear face veils is reported to be vanishingly small. It is not the first time that Swiss voters have chosen in a referendum to curtail symbols associated with Islam. A 2009 referendum banned the construction of minarets on mosques. Austria, France, Belgium and Denmark have also banned face veils in public in recent years as governments face pressure to stand against a dress code viewed by some as oppressive of women. Even some Muslim-majority countries have issued restrictions on the veil. Tunisia brought in a ban on face coverings in public institutions in 2019 amid security concerns. Reacting to the referendum result, Swiss Justice Minister Karin Keller-Sutter conceded that the Swiss people and a majority of the cantons see things differently to the government. The Swiss government is instead proposing introducing a law that would require a woman to lift her veil should she be asked to do so by state officials for security reasons. Ms. Keller-Sutter insisted, however, that this was not a vote against the Muslims of Switzerland. The Swiss cantons will now have 2 years to implement the decision. In the UK, cathedral choirs are struggling to survive amid frustration that the government's lockdown plan fails to make clear when singing can safely return. Last Friday, the charity, the Cathedral Music Trust, closed applications for its latest round of funds after being inundated with appeals for help. 40 choirs have made bids for £1.5 million, appealing for help to keep their music going in the coming months. It is a major rise on the last round of bids in December, when 30 choirs asked the Trust for £1 million worth of aid, but the charity could only meet a third of the requests. While the government has laid out the country's path out of lockdown, cathedrals face continuing lack of income from congregations and from tourists. Even though Easter is just a short time away, there is no sign that there will be the usual Good Friday and Easter Sunday services with congregations and choral singing. Peter Allwood, chair of the Trust, said the cathedrals need help if they are to be able to restore music when normality returns. However, the government's most recent roadmap does not make it clear when that will be. At the moment, it's not looking good for Easter. According to one member of the government's Places of Worship task force, faith organisations have been lobbying for months to get ministers to discuss when singing can return to churches and other places of worship. Singing keeps being raised by faith groups for discussion at the meeting, said the member. Easter isn't on the government's wavelength at the moment. But with a task force meeting due to meet next Wednesday and singing on its agenda, there is hope it may return as lockdown ends. Running a cathedral choir costs between £100,000 to £500,000 a year, depending on the number of choristers and tenor lay clerks, with much of the money spent on choir school fees. Last year, the Church of England's Church Commissioners and Archbishop's Council provided emergency funding after the larger historic cathedrals such as Canterbury and St Paul's, which rely on tourism from overseas, were badly affected by lockdowns. Durham's 750,000 visitors provide one-fifth of its annual revenue of £7 million. Around £7 million was also awarded to cathedrals from the government's Culture Recovery Fund to help offset the loss of income during the pandemic and help keep skilled jobs going. Now cathedrals are anxiously waiting to hear if they will receive grants in the next Culture Recovery Fund phase as they struggle to balance their books and fear job losses once the Chancellor's furlough scheme comes to an end. Nick Edmonds from the Church of England said, "We urge the government and to commit to sustained investment so that our cathedrals can continue to serve their communities economically, spiritually, and as beacons of culture and heritage." Allotments, golf courses, sport pitches, and farmland around the UK are destined to be reclaimed by council to bury Britain's dead, a Times investigation has found, as the country's cemetery space crisis worsens. The government has said it is looking into action to alleviate the problem and may consider changing the law around burials, as data compiled by The Times show that one in four local authorities around the UK have 10 years or less before their existing council-owned cemeteries are full to capacity, while almost one in six have 5 years or less. About half have 20 years or less before their final grave is filled. The 259 councils that responded had a total of at least 42,451 burials in 2020, an 11% increase on the year before. Some councils, including the Orkney Islands, said they've been forced to suspend the reservation of graves for future use as a result of the COVID pandemic. Blackburn, with Darwen Council, said it had been forced to review its burial space due to the increases in deaths caused by COVID-19. The councils surveyed by The Times run 2,187 active cemeteries and maintain a further 1,150 that are already full and closed to new burials. Councils have a median of 25 years of space left, falling to 15 years for the 10 largest cities. Lambeth Council in London said it had between 6 and 9 months before completely running out of graves. Oxford City Council and Kensington and Chelsea in London said they would run out next year. 9 councils said they had no empty graves at all, while many only have space for burials in existing family plots. As their graveyards reach full capacity, councils must find new parcels of land that can be used for new or extended cemetery space. The Times found that 54% of councils have prepared for this scenario by earmarking tracts of council-owned land for future grave plots. In many cases, this land was earmarked decades ago and has been leased out for other uses until it is needed. Ealing Council in West London has 2 years of burial space left and has identified allotments as possible cemetery space. Nick West, 77, a resident of Upton-upon-Severn in Worcestershire, said his allotment of 10 years has already been bulldozed to make way for grave space. He started a petition in 2019, but Upton Town Council said it had bought the whole plot of land in 1888 for use as a cemetery and now needed to use the allotment area to provide 50 extra years of burial space. Since then, they've demolished all those allotments and made a nice job of grassing over and demolishing the sheds, West, a retired shopkeeper and taxi driver, said. He was offered another allotment, but the patch was prone to flooding from the Severn. He said, "I'm now back at home with a very small patch, which is not the same." Allotment holders near the Lanfoist Cemetery in Abergavenny have been told their plots will have to make way for graves within the next 7 years. Malcolm Davis, 72, chairman of the local allotment association, said, "None of us had a clue about the history of the allotment land, but we found it was purchased as part of the original cemetery in 1891 and had been a temporary allotment site since 1917. He said Monmouthshire Council have promised to find them an alternative allotment site when the time comes. When you get an allotment, you sign a tenancy agreement and aren't told whether you're on a temporary site, so it's quite likely that people won't know that it's earmarked for graves," Diane Appleyard of the National Allotment Society said. Kenneth Crowley, an IT specialist at a law firm who chairs the Whitstable View Allotment Association in Kent, said he was aware that the allotments by Whitstable Cemetery are formally earmarked as overspill cemetery space, but Canterbury Council has said it had 25 years before running out of graves. Crowley said, "If you've been on the site for a few years, you will have noticed that the graves are slowly but surely creeping towards you." A pitch and putt golf course near the East Hampstead Park Cemetery in Wokingham, Berkshire, is being investigated for its suitability as a potential cemetery, according to Bracknell Forest Council, which has just 2 years of burial space left, while Runnymede Council in Surrey is also considering reclaiming part of a golf course for graves. In total, at least 13 allotment sites, 2 golf courses, 5 sports pitches and 56 areas of farmland have been earmarked for graves among the councils that have responded. Councils can apply for a licence to reuse old graves, often reburying old remains at a lower depth to make way for new burials above if there are no relatives who object. They must apply for a licence for every such burial. A Ministry of Justice spokesman said, "We are considering whether action may be needed to address this sensitive issue. Any changes in this area, including legislation, would need careful consideration." Cremations first overtook burials in the UK in 1968, and the UK now has one of the highest rates of cremation in the world, at around 77.8%, up from 71.5% in 2000, but the level is likely to plateau. In 2019, some 134,000 people still chose to be buried for reasons of tradition or religion. Muslim, Jewish and Orthodox Christian teachings call for believers to be buried rather than cremated. The Muslim section of the council-run Handsworth Cemetery in Birmingham was declared full in November last year, while Mohammed Omar of the Gardens of Peace, a London-based Muslim burial charity, said he was expecting an acute shortage of burial space within 4 to 5 years. Government estimates show that 77% of burials take place in council-owned cemeteries, although they make up only 21% of all cemeteries in England and Wales. About 70% are Anglican churchyards, which are estimated to have around 25 years of space left on average in 2007. The church said that parishes find ad hoc solutions locally when they need to extend their space. Dr. Julie Rugg, a researcher at York University, said that resomation, a process of dissolving a body in a water-based alkaline solution to leave behind an ash-like residue from the bones that can be returned to the family for retention or scattering, may grow in popularity among those who cannot find burial space and dislike the idea of a flaming cremation. It is legal, but water firms have sometimes objected to the liquid solution being flushed away. Those hoping to secure a burial spot may need to pre-purchase a plot if their local council still allows reservations. The law also gives every English resident the right to request a burial spot in a local Church of England parish churchyard if there is space. Some councils, such as the local borough of Haringey, now rely entirely on private cemetery companies. Eco-friendly and woodland funerals are growing in popularity, where people are buried in wicker or biodegradable coffins in a usually unmarked grave in a natural setting set aside for burials. It is also legal to choose a burial site on your own land if you own it outright and it is far enough from watercourses and sources to meet Environment Agency rules. And finally, Pastor Jamie was driving a little too fast down the road when he missed a turn and his car went into a ditch. As he climbed out, a man pulled up and asked if he was all right. "Oh yes, Jesus is with me," Pastor Jamie replied. The man thought that over for a minute. He said, "Well, you better let him get in with me. You're going to kill him."
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.